So the beginning, first of all, and I don't know why I didn't notice this before, when I was writing up the orientation, but there is a problem in the description for exercise two. And people may have noticed that. There's a word missing. Let's see. Oh, well, maybe the issue is that I was using, that's interesting. I guess I'm using a second printing here. So it's been fixed. So it may or may not be a problem in your version. In the second printing, it was fixed. In the first printing, in line three of the exercise, the line should read, knowledge of what is happening, comma, let yourself rest in the activity of rest in the. The word that was missing was rest. So, if anybody had that problem, I apologize. But at least now I understand why I didn't see it before. I have, several copies of this book lying around, and I looked in one before that was okay. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing is that I have decided. Confirmed in my own mind that we do want to organize a TSK retreat in the summer, and I don't know if people, of course, it'll happen if enough people want to attend, so we'll see. It'll be done differently this year. I really have a lot of responsibilities down here in Berkeley right now, so we would do the retreat here in Berkeley, and what I'm thinking right now is that we would. People would stay at the Nyingma Institute, and we would have our sessions in two places. One at Mangalam Centers, and for those of you who don't know about Mangalam Centers, it's a very beautiful building that we the Nyingma organizations now own and operate out of. And there's some perfectly nice rooms for holding meetings. Of this kind. So we would do some of our meetings here at Mangalam Centers. It's about a 20-minute walk from the Institute. So you can walk through the university campus. It's a very nice walk. And we would do a walk, we would do a practice. The walk would be a practice, and we'd kind of fine-tune that as we actually are there. So some of the sessions would take place at Mangalam. But some of them, I think we would go outdoors. There's a beautiful park system here in Berkeley up in the hills that's called the East Bay Regional Park District, for those of you who haven't been to Berkeley. And there's some great places miles and miles and miles of hiking and trails and so on. And I'm sure we could find a nice place to practice. In fact, I would have some fun scouting that out. So, we would do the practice partly down here, partly outdoors. And if we thought, if we wanted to go to some other outdoor venue, there's lots of options here. You'll hear some more information about the retreat soon, but I wanted to let people who are taking part in the phone call today or who listen to the phone call know about it. So, the first. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. It's June 14th through 18th. That's it. June 14th through 18th. We might be able to squeeze it out, extend it out to the 19th if people really wanted to. But now let's not give people too many options. June 14th through 18th. Okay. So those were a few announcements, and you'll be hearing more about the retreat soon, I'm sure. So here we are. We're in our last session. The focus, of course, has been thinking, and lately I've been thinking about, how would you summarize the kind of basic theme that we've been exploring? And you could say understanding thoughts, understanding the difference between thoughts and thinking, and in a sense, making friends with thinking, so that it becomes an opportunity for inquiry instead of a distraction from focus and attention. And that's what we've been doing, and in the last couple of weeks, we've focused in a little more on exercises. So for this week, we just read exercise 2 and the commentary to exercise 2. And I thought a good thing to do for today is simply do the practice that's described for a few minutes, and then we will discuss that. So it's very similar to what we've been doing. It in a way focuses in more clearly, more specifically on this underlying theme of the difference between the content of thoughts and the activity of thinking. So the exercise says, let thoughts arise in the mind. And of course, this is a question of letting in the sense that thoughts are always arising in the mind. Now, I have to say, this is in the orientation and it's come up, at least for me, it's come up several times. I am someone who thinks a lot. Not everybody is. So for me, when I see an instruction that says, let thoughts arise in the mind, that basically says, just relax and let what usually happens happen. That doesn't mean that if you were doing meditation, thoughts might not cease. And in fact, one of the things it says in the commentary here is that if you don't hold on to the content of thoughts, thoughts become less dominant. But my main point here is that while I do a lot of thinking as just the natural way my mind operates, some people don't. Did someone want to say something, or was that a throat clearing? I guess it was a throat clearing. Several times in these online programs, I've mentioned some work that's done by a friend of mine, a professor who teaches at the University of Nevada, who gives people beepers. And when the beep goes off, they write down a few notes about what was going on in their minds just before the beep. And then within 24 hours, he talks to them. That's his experimental method. He talks to them about what was going on, and without leading them, he tries to really get more detail about what was going on in their stream of mental events or in their mind. And I think it's really interesting and important work because you realize, among other things, you realize that people are really different. And one of the differences that really struck me when he talked about this is that some people, when they report what's going on in their mind, very consistently report perceptual or sensory experiences. And that's the focus for them. In my case, if I'm reporting, I might be reporting a thought, and I might be reporting an observation too, various things. But there are people who, if you beep them one time, they'll say, well, I was noticing the way that the traffic light reflected off the rain in the sidewalk. And then if you beep them again, they might say, I was noticing the feeling of the piece of paper that I was holding in my hand. Or, it's all very perceptual. And so the point that I've made a couple of times is when Rinpoche says the stream of thoughts, he does make it pretty clear that includes perception, that thought and perception are not different in this respect. So, and one way of thinking about that, one way of making sense out of that we've also talked about, is that a perception is not, how can you say it? It's not something that's separate from the thinking process. In order to perceive something, here's one way to think about this. There's many ways you could say it. In order to perceive something, you have to recognize it. And recognizing it means introducing a conceptual element. It's you perceive something as what it is, and that as what it is like a thought. It may not be the usual kind of thought we're used to, but it's very much like a thought. So I'm just making this point because I don't want somebody to get, puzzled by the instruction that we should let let thoughts arise in the mind. And you say, well, I don't have any thoughts. I just have perception, so I guess I can't do this. No, it's the same thing. Bruce in the chat here quotes Francisco Varela about this. Perception is as imaginary as imagination is perceptual. And that's nice. I hadn't heard that before, because it's of course true that when we imagine something, we perceive it in what is sometimes called the mind's eye. And so you could say when we perceive something, we are also imagining it. Okay, enough of that, because it's kind of a sidelight to the practice. Let's go ahead and do the practice, and I'll point again to the instructions. Let thoughts arise in the mind instead of depending on the content of the thoughts for knowledge of what is happening. In other words, instead of looking to the content to say, I know what's going on, it's the content of whatever it is I'm thinking about. Instead of that, let yourself rest in the activity of thinking. There's no need to report back on what is thought. There's no need to craft the content of thoughts into new and ongoing stories. Just stay with the thinking of each thought. So the focus is on the thinking of the thought instead of the content of the thought. That's the short way of saying it. Let's go ahead and do that for about 5 minutes, and then we'll take some time to discuss it. Okay. Okay, let's take stock. Let's see. So we've been doing a practice similar to this for the last 2 or 3 weeks, and presumably you've been experimenting with it in your own, during the week. So either based on that or what you were just looking at, what would people like to say? Anybody like to, again, we have the chat possibility and we have the possibility of speaking up. I know 5 minutes is not very long. Anybody have any thoughts?
Michael,
Yes.
I find it really interesting how TSK sort of draws you into an appreciation for the characteristics of life that initially are challenged. And the first thought is, oh, the self's bad, thinking's bad. And then you can see that it's more like if you become aware and acquainted and maybe even appreciative of these sort of natural proclivities and kind of ways of living, then you can not be you can stop being selfish and anxious, but still recognize that the self is an entity that we need for ordinary life. And the same with thinking. I sort of like how it brings you into that kind of way of relating to the activity of your own mind.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. It is very much in the TSK mode to let us appreciate the immediate and the ordinary and find the beauty and the wonder in it. When I say it that way, I sound too much like a promo piece, but I think what you said was very good. What about specifically with regard to this practice just now? Was what led you to reflect on that in the in this practice?
Just the mind was kind of quiet, and I just was sort of like inclined to survey how I feel happier and calmer, and a lot of it. It's like thought is the main instrument for all the Nyingma teachings, and I was just sort of reflecting that how I benefited from that acquaintance. And I'm not like some people around me who are kind of anxious all the time and don't have an effective way of dealing with it, you know?
Okay, that's good. That very much makes sense. And that also is a good point, when there is the kind of, I think, the most simple. Well, I was going to say simple-minded, but that's not fair. But one way of understanding, meditation and the various practices related to it is to say that you want to get more in touch with the immediacy of your experience, and you'd like to quiet the thinking mind. And there's certainly something to that, and that's one way to practice. And as I said, Rinpoche does say in the instructions for this exercise that if you focus on the activity of thinking rather than the content of thinking, then thoughts will quiet down because they don't really have such a job to do anymore. We don't depend on them in the same way. But the other side of that is that really, in almost every circumstance, the vehicle for communicating knowledge, at least, is thought. There are other possibilities, but thought in the form of speech, thought in the form of writing, and then there is communication, of course, that takes place on a nonverbal level, but so much of it, so much of it is conceptual. So that's our starting point, and it goes very much to the second suggestion, or is it the third in this exercise, Rinpoche says, it's the third, it's in part B, when he says, practice understand what is being said, understanding what is being said, without relying on the words. So it seems like kind of a paradoxical instruction, because you say, well, but the words, you know, that's what I have to understand when something is being said. And that's so, but that understanding, it's kind of, it comes along for the ride, you know. If you're tuned in to the saying in the same way that you're tuned in to the thinking, then the content of the saying comes along with the activity of saying. So you might try that. I guess I'm committing myself to at least a minute or two here of rambling on, but since that's what I usually do, I can probably handle it. So in other words, right now, as you're listening to me speaking, the instruction in the exercise is to practice understanding what's being, let me go back and look at it again, the language is always important, practice understanding what's being said without relying on the words. And so you can be doing that right now. That's an easy way to, we're getting two for the price of one here. and in fact, I think what I'm going to do is just go ahead and read the first paragraph of the comment, but I'm going to ask you to do this practice, right? To practice understanding what is being said as I read without relying on the words. Okay, so here it is. The models that govern ordinary knowledge are conducted by thoughts. As thoughts stream through our minds, we sort them in various ways. Some thoughts are available as tools. Others take over our awareness completely, so that we fall into the world that they create. Okay, so what about this distinction between words and understanding, which is very much like the distinction between thinking or thoughts and the activity of thinking? Any reflections on that? Say that again. That's suitable, right? Did you say, are you asking? The answer is yes, I'm asking.
Is that a question from the listener?
Yeah, I'm not hearing you so well. Can you say that again?
Yeah, I wondered if you wanted a reflection regarding what you just assigned.
Ah, no, I wanted your reflections. You mean what I just read? No, I wanted your reflections on the difference between understanding what I just read through the words and understanding through the, what can we say, understanding without relying on the words. In some ways, nobody's coming forward, so I'm just going to keep talking for a minute, but I'd be very interested in what you say, and I'm also going to go back to Bruce's comment in the chat in a moment. But in some ways, it's actually the most natural thing, I think, to understand without relying on the words. I mean, suppose someone was not using words. Somebody was speaking, but somehow not using words. You might say, well, we have to rely on the other aspects of their communication, the inflection of their speech. So, to give an example that I'm fond of, just because it's striking to me, if somebody says to someone else, "What do you want to do?" and that other person says, "Oh, and that's the whole thing, you understand. You know, in the context, that's enough. Even though there are no words, there's just this funny sound. But I don't think that that's what's being said here. I think that what's being said here is that we actually don't rely on the words. Or let me, that's not exactly what's being said here. It's what I'm saying, though, it's in fact true that the words are in one sense, they're the necessary vehicle for understanding, but we don't pay attention to them. And it's a little bit like saying, you know, the computer is the vehicle for transmitting, or it's not a good example. An email program is the vehicle for sending you emails, but if it's working properly, you don't think about it at all. And words are kind of like, excuse me?
That's certainly what I found. I'm sitting here with my eyes closed, and you're reading that out, and you talk about a stream of thought, so I'm in a stream, and then you talk about tools, and so I see something useful going by, or being swept away by the images, and then I may be in the water swimming, and sort of like walking. You're not aware of the steps, but
right.
you're there. You are. Looking up and hearing a raven in the branches above you.
That's very interesting and nice. Yeah. I'll give you another example that that I've always found interesting. I'm fairly bilingual. You know, I actually spoke German until the age of 3, rather than English. And with my parents in particular, they usually spoke German, but sometimes they didn't. And I noticed that when I would be describing something to someone else, some conversation that I'd had with my parents, if I thought about it, I didn't usually know whether they'd been speaking in English or in German. I certainly knew what they'd been saying. You know, I could report to someone, I was talking with my parents and they said such and such. But I didn't know, you know, I didn't know what language they were using. So that obviously meant that I didn't know what words they were using. So the meaning comes in a different way. And that's part of what's being said here. Maybe we can refer that back up. So your example, Michael, is a little different, very interesting. You know, you were saying that the meaning is partly just is very imagistic or has to do with senses. And that, you know, again, as I was saying before, people are very different about this. But that would be another element to explore. But if we take it back up to, by up, I'm being very literal, I mean, if we go to the preceding paragraph, where Rinpoche is giving the instruction or the exercise says, be aware of the activity of thinking rather than the content of the thought, the example of words and meaning may help to shed some light on that, you know, in this case, what we're doing is not looking at the content of the thought, but at the thinking. So now let me go back to what Bruce wrote here in the chat. You know, and I think this is exactly right and is related to what Michael said. Bruce says, essentially in this practice, we're saying yes to the activity of thinking. And you did have the experience, Bruce, then that Rinpoche points to of how the way that helps calm and quiet the thinking mind and introduces space. You know, there's another dimension to that. Rinpoche refers in his commentary here to the fact that this helps us return to the multidimensionality of experience. And I think that's a very helpful way to look into this, think about this. The thing about thinking, and Rinpoche uses a phrase in Love of Knowledge, I think is very relevant here. He says, thinking is single-minded. And that's related to what he says in the commentary here about beads of thoughts, you know, how one thought succeeds another in a very linear way. Thinking is this this thing that we do that narrows down the range of experience just to the content of the thought. Now that's a little bit confusing because our thinking has content, and the content may have different dimensions. So, for instance, if you're daydreaming, which let's assume that's a kind of thinking, you know, the daydream may be very rich in a sense. But, you know, so you may, I don't know, if you imagine that you're on an island somewhere, and you may have a pretty vivid sense of the blue sky and the sun and the breezes and the sand under your feet, or that's a tropical island, by the way. You know, you say, well, that's not one-dimensional, but it is, because all of it's taking place in the realm of thinking. It can be kind of, it can be a pretty good substitute for the richness of experience, but it is not the richness of experience. And when you become aware of the activity of thinking, Bruce said, says here, what he discovered when thoughts calm down, it was space, which I think is very good. That's a very good way of just of talking about this. Multidimensionality is another way of talking about it. And of course, space and dimensionality are very closely linked to one another. So,
I have experience, this is Hayward.
Yeah.
When thoughts quiet, there's space. And then when thinking starts again, there's it feels as though space becomes banded, and then there's a linear movement, like space becomes constricted, and there's movement kind of from left to right. So I get both the constriction of the openness and the movement.
Mm-hmm.
Both.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So thinking is, you know, it seems to me it's fair to say, despite what I said about, you know, the possible richness within the thought, it's fair to say that thinking is constricted, and that's what I meant by pointing to Rinpoche's description of thinking as single-minded. There's only this kind of single thread that you're following out in your thoughts. On the other hand, the movement, you might say, has more to do with the activity of thinking, because that, after all, is what we mean when we talk about activity. It's a kind of an onward, ongoing, and dynamic quality. So, you know, the constricted quality of thought, which has very much to do with the fact that you're limiting yourself to the content of what you're thinking about rather than the experience of thinking, that may be part of what you notice when you notice the activity of thinking. And you know, one thing that I was kind of reflecting on when we did that exercise is that in order to be aware of the activity of thinking, as opposed to the content of thought, you have to be able to make a contrast. You know, you have to be able to say, okay, so at this point, I was caught up, and Rinpoche gives two possibilities here. He says a thought can be a tool. So, you know, let's imagine you're doing addition. You know, well, you're adding something up. That would be thought as a tool, I guess. Or it can be something that we fall into and lose ourselves in. Either way, in order to have a sense of what that's about, we need to be able to contrast it to this other possibility of space or openness or multidimensionality. And one thing that, you know, since we're at the end of our time now, one thing I want to suggest to you, and it's come up before, is that one way to do this exercise, because it can be very difficult to get free of the focus on the content of thinking. We rely so much on our thoughts. So if you have trouble kind of separating that out or letting it settle down, Sometimes it really helps to, when you become aware that you've been in the thought, you've been lost in the thought, you can look backwards at the thought that you were just having and see if there's something you can find within that past thought, that immediate past thought, which is not the content, but the activity. In other words, you can do this exercise, or at least get a sense of this exercise, by looking backward at the previous thought. And that's, you can do that even if, in fact, you spend a lot of time caught in thoughts. So that's something to look at. I'm going to end, I think, by looking at the question that Bruce asks at the end of this chat. How much of the busyness of my normal mind is founded in resistance or saying no? In other words, saying no to this kind of stream, this activity of thinking. That may be a very useful way to think about it. What Rinpoche is suggesting, I think, is in effect, the busyness of the mind is a response to relying on the content of thoughts, or is the same as relying on the content of thoughts. But when we rely on the content of thoughts, we are in effect saying no to the rest of our experience. And that experience may be the activity of thinking. Okay, well, that may sound a little complicated. I don't mean for this to be complicated. It isn't complicated. It's asking us to do something new. And of course, that's what TSK is really good at. It's consistently asking us to do something that we didn't even realize or consider that we could do. But it's like finding a new dimension in what we've already been doing all along. It's not that we have to go somewhere else. Okay, I think we're going to stop it there. We start up again in about 3 weeks, I think.
Oh.
2 weeks or 3 weeks. You'll get a notice about it. And we're going to focus more on senses. So for those of you who feel worn out with thinking, maybe that'll be a nice change if you want to continue with the program. So I think it's been a very interesting quarter. We've looked at some really good things, and I do like the approach we've been taking of working with particular thoughts, or I'm sorry, working with particular small chunks of the TSK text and really going into them in depth. Those of you who've looked at the assigned readings for next term, we'll do something similar, although in the next program we're going to focus on knowledge of time and space. And that may be very interesting for you, because I know that's one of the less read books in the TSK series, because